also was studying.
You are listening to the Audio Information Network of Colorado. This recording is intended to be used solely by individuals with barriers to print.
Good afternoon, and thank you for joining us for the June 14th reading of The Environment, a compilation of articles from Mother Earth News, the Nature Conservancy Magazine, and the Sierra Club Magazine. My name is John. I have a couple of articles from the Sierra Club Magazine we'll start with today. Drops of Hope Along the Colorado River. After 174 years, the Navajo Nation is still trying to regain access. Written by Morgan Sorgren, May 30th, 2023. And also, What's to be Done About the Wild Horse Herds of the American West? They're tearing up rangeland and riparian areas, and also our ideas about wildness. This was written by Heather Hansman, June 12th, 2023. And we'll go ahead and start with What's to be Done About the Wild Horse Herds of the American West. I am watching 35 young geldings weave through a muddy arena off the highway south of Grand Junction, Colorado, wondering what a wild horse is supposed to look like. The Mustangs are mainly black and bay, and some are that ruddy, relish color that Western riders call sorrel. They have dished noses and delicate legs, and they each have a red rope with a number around their neck. Five to a pen, they school like fish, heads moving in the same direction at once, tracking threats or any minor change in their surroundings. They're nervy, noses and ears up, like they're onto something and I'm not smart enough to understand. There's a 5-foot gap between the pens and the area where people can observe, so I can't go up to the fence and try to lure the horses by putting out the flat of my hand. They look alert, and they look wise, and they're fat enough to be shiny. It's day one of a Bureau of Land Management wild horse auction. This November morning followed the first real snowstorm of the season, and all of the passes into Grand Junction have been sketchy. Still, the lot is full of trailers. People who have driven over the Rockies from Cheyenne, Wyoming, or up from New Mexico are rocking from boot to boot in the bitter cold, trying to follow the patches of sun that sift through the roof. Wild horse advocacy groups and equine trainers have set up tents around the arena, and potential buyers, many of them teenage girls and their families, circle the pens looking for connection. Today, we're watching. Tomorrow, auction day, there will be a list in front of every horse pen. You write your name down, and if you have $125 and meet a few requirements, like having adequate fencing on your property, you can be in the running to take home up to 4 Mustangs, the BLM's yearly limit. The horse girls, many of whom already have multiple Mustangs, say the animals are magic. They say the wild horses are smarter, tougher, and more loyal than domestic horses. Mustangs get a freeze brand on the left side of their neck when they come off the range so that the BLM can identify them, and the girls have sweatshirts and lockets with their horse's brand on them. It's proof of their love and a symbol of the romantic place that Mustangs hold in the American imagination. But romance is rarely simple, and even the name of this animal is tied up in complex stories. Mustangs. The colloquial term for wild horses technically refers to the descendants of horses brought to North America by the Spanish that eventually got loose and spread over much of the continent. Mustang comes from the Spanish word mestero, meaning a stray or ownerless beast. By now, the honorific Mustang has come to mean just about any free-roaming horse. Some people prefer another term, feral horses, a way of communicating that the animals aren't native to the American landscape and that, in many places, they have become something of a pest. According to a study in the Journal of Wildlife Management, there are some 225,000 free-roaming horses in burros in the United States today. Most of those are spread across the West, from the pinyon-juniper woodland of the Four Corners region to the high desert of the Great Basin to the sagebrush steppe on the leeward side of the Sierra Nevada and the Cascade Range. About 83,000 of those horses and burros are in lands managed by the BLM, the federal agency that has formal oversight of the animals. The rest are found on Native American nations and other public lands where the BLM has no jurisdiction. In Nevada, there are more wild horses than all game animals combined. The number of horses, along with all of the cattle grazing on public lands, has led to a calamity on the rangeland. Wild horses are reproducing at unsustainable rates. Between 2007 and 2021, their numbers more than tripled. In their search for forage, wild animals are tearing up high desert vegetation, degrading riparian areas, and trampling fragile native plants. Free-roaming horses and burros are a major cause of the destruction of biocrust, the top layer of desert soils, which has been shown to be an anchor of desert biodiversity. As climate change makes the West hotter and drier, the animals are struggling to find water as well. In some places, horses have been known to die of starvation and dehydration. Wild horse advocates, cattle ranchers, ranch ecologists, and federal officials have struggled for decades to agree on a solution. Roundups for slaughter are off the table, as a matter of both humane treatment and U.S. law. Birth control programs have shown promise, but they are difficult to carry out and are opposed by some horse advocates who express worries about horse health, genetic diversity, and unintentional sterilization. Some horse advocates complain that the BLM's annual roundups can be inhumane. And once the animals are taken from the wild, there's the question of how to host them all. Not every horse finds a girl who loves it, and adoption rates are low. Last year, 20,200 horses were rounded up in the United States. Just 6,600 of those were adopted. The rest went off to range-holding ranches, where they joined the approximately 62,000 horses already there. Trying to keep wild horse numbers at the status quo, much less reduce them, is expensive. This year, the BLM's Wild Horse and Burro program will cost taxpayers $153 million, $15 million more than in 2022. It cost the government roughly $27,500 to care for each wild horse and burro over its lifetime in a holding ranch. That cost is expected to increase by nearly a third this year due to the rising price of feed. One thing that horse people and ecologists agree on is that this situation is a mess. The system is so broken that Congress has called it a national crisis. Here, amid the icy mud of the wild horse auction in Grand Junction, the magic and myth of the Mustang seem to collide with the realities of landscape management, policy tussles, and laws that haven't been meaningfully updated since the 1970s. The auctions are insufficient, yet they're one of the only tools the BLM has for managing the horse numbers on the range. Brittany Sprout, a public affairs specialist for the BLM's Colorado office, is standing at the edge of the corrals in an oversized brown parka, fielding questions. She knows the roundups that bring horses to these auctions are controversial, that no one really likes them. But she says the agency is obligated to keep the number of horses on the range to a federally mandated maximum. We are required by law to gather horses, and this adoption helps us, she says. It supports healthy horses on healthy rangelands. Healthy horses on healthy landscapes. That's what everyone who's connected to wild horses says they want. But how can we reach that goal, especially in the era of climate chaos, especially with an animal that sparks such intense emotions? That question echoes other land management controversies in the United States today. The story of wild horses is also the story of water and space and the ideal of wilderness. The hope that the American West is still big enough for everyone who wants a slice and that last century's laws are adequate for 21st century complexities. But on the range today, there is not enough to go around, and our ideas about wildness must be constrained by reality. How can we know what the reality is when we've been operating on stories for so long? Speaking of stories, I should admit that I'm one of those horse girls. I was 7 the first time I sat up on a fat, ornery pony. I got bucked almost immediately, but from then on, I was in love. I slipped under the electric fence behind the local barn and tried to lure horses with handfuls of grass. I tried to see how fast I could go on a straight-line gallop to find the balance between risk and control, wildness and grace. I inhaled the idea that if I was special and patient and brave, and if I broke the rules just a little bit, that a wild thing would recognize some of itself in me. That narrative wove itself into my malleable kid brain and kept going. In high school, I drove hours through suburban Massachusetts to muck stalls in exchange for riding lessons, because smelling like shit felt like a fair trade for learning to control something bigger than myself. I'm not alone. Yale social scientist Stephen Kellert, who studied the role of animals in human society, found that horses are the second most valued animal in the United States, right behind dogs, even though dogs are much more integrated into our domestic lives. Horses are treated differently because they are different, physiologically and historically. They are perceived to have high emotional and social intelligence, which is why they are often used as therapy animals. And horses in general, and Mustangs in particular, were pivotal in the country's history, which is an argument many horse protectors lean on for their defense. Plus, they're beautiful. When Edward Muybridge shot the first moving pictures of horses, he found that they float when they run. At a gallop, there's a moment when they're fully suspended in air, no hooves touching the earth. Horses do sort of seem magical, and Mustangs, with their innate independence, seem even more so. Because of all that, the auction splits me. Part of my brain logically says, yes, this is an overpopulation problem. Another part of me is pushing up against the fence, trying to make eye contact with a wild thing. I am part of the problem. I love wild horses while not knowing what kind of wildness is realistic or fair. In theory, I'd love to adopt a herd of Mustangs. In reality, I live in a neighborhood not zoned for horses, in a place with a lousy chain-link fence. I drive a hatchback. That rub between romance and reality is where horses get tricky. First, there's the complicated question of whether wild horses belong in the United States at all. Fossil horse DNA has been found on Clovis points in the foothills of the Rocky Mountains, so there is proof that horses lived in what we now call North America as recently as 13,000 years ago. Then, about 10,000 years ago, they disappeared, one more casualty in what's called the megafaunal extinction. There were no horses in the Americas in 1491, and there hadn't been for millennia. The first widespread release of horses was likely during the 1680 Pueblo Revolt, where indigenous peoples in the Rio Grande Valley of present-day New Mexico briefly overthrew Spanish rule. In their hasty retreat, the Spanish left behind about 1,500 horses. Those horses and their descendants were perfectly adapted to the dry, open expanse of the western parts of the continent. They thrived and spread. Native societies from the Great Plains to the Southwest eventually tamed the offspring of the Spanish horses. The horse became central to many native societies, a form of transportation and portage, a hunting vehicle, a tool of warfare, a status symbol, and a revered icon. The rights of a wild horse are a lot like the rights of citizenship. A lot of it depends only on where you were born, David Phillips writes in his book, Wild Horse Country. Wild horses are, in other words, immigrants. They're the best symbol of Americans' mythic idea of ourselves, scrappy, beautiful, and free. And as it has been for many immigrants, their time here has been fraught. By the early 20th century, there were millions of wild horses scattered across the western United States. With the rise of the automobile, working horses weren't as necessary anymore, and many domestic horses were shot or sent to slaughter. Others were abandoned, putting more free-roaming horses onto the land and diluting the Mustang genetics. As populations increased, wild horses were thought as a vermin, which set off decades of dramatic animal abuse driven by capitalism. A 1920 tourism ad in Popular Mechanics encouraged tourists to travel to the West to shoot horses for sport. In 1922, Kennel Ration started using wild horse meat for dog food because it was abundant and considered low value. During the next two decades, nearly 2 million Mustangs went to slaughterhouses, where their meat became dog chow and their hides were used for making baseballs. Across the West, bounty-hunting cowboys known as Mustangers indiscriminately rounded up wild horses and sent them to slaughterhouses. Those roundups continued until the 1950s, when there were only about 20,000 horses left in the wild. That's when Velma Braun Johnston, a native rancher nicknamed Wild Horse Annie, changed the image of wild horses and turned them from a source of fresh meat into a national icon. She was horrified by how Mustangers were treating horses, and she kicked off a powerful campaign to tell the story of how wild horses were being killed and abused, and how Mustangs should be saved. Now, in a time when we can harass our elected officials over Twitter, it's hard to overstate how elaborate and effective Johnson's campaign was. She enlisted young children, socialites, and school teachers to write thousands of letters to elected officials in favor of protecting wild horses. During the 86th Congress of 1959 through 61, wild horse protection was among the most popular issues that elected officials heard about. In 1959, Congress passed the Wild Horse Protection Act, which banned the hunting of feral horses from aircraft and motorized vehicles on federal land. More expansive protections followed. Wild horses became federally protected under the Wild Free Roaming Horses and Burros Act of 1971, which gave the BLM power to manage horses in specific herd management areas, enmeshing the animal in the BLM's maxim of multiple use. With the new regulations in place, wild horse numbers quickly increased, so Congress passed the Federal Land Policy and Management Act of 1976, allowing helicopter roundups. 2 years later, the Public Rangelands Improvement Act created the Adopt-a-Horse auctions and required the BLM to set specific population levels for each herd management area, which led to additional roundups and long-term holding on private ranches as the approved way to get horses off the range. This string of national laws put free-roaming horses into a class of their own. Horses are the only species, besides bald eagles, that are specifically protected from hunting and commercial slaughter by federal law. We kill feral hogs and cattle and euthanize overpopulated dogs and cats. Many people hunt deer and elk. Even grizzly bears and wolves that are federally protected can be killed in some situations. Yet we round up horses and hold them in storage for perpetuity to the tune of hundreds of millions of dollars. Celeste Carlisle, a biologist with the advocacy group Return to Freedom, who also serves on the BLM Wild Horse and Burro Advisory Board, said we're mired in a system that does not really work for the horses, the people who love them, or the landscapes they inhabit. To pull out any species and just manage for that species, that's not healthy ecosystem management, she told me. Biodiversity matters. You want to consider the songbirds and the lizards and plants and horses. And on public lands, the law states that you consider that and all the multiple uses occurring there. The horses at the Grand Junction auction had been gathered from the Piscines East Douglas herd, which roams across 190,000 acres of hilly Colorado pinyon juniper and sage. In July 2022, range managers from the BLM's White River Field Office, along with the local volunteer group PNC's Mustangs, gathered a total of 864 horses. They pulled 771 off the range for good. The rest were sent back to the wild, all of the mares dosed with birth control. It was the first roundup at the Piscines East Douglas herd management area since 2011, and in the space of a decade, the herd had grown by thousands. Horse populations increase about 20% each year without fertility management. Local volunteers had been darting the horses with Gonicon, a two-phase birth control method, but their efforts hadn't been enough to keep the numbers down. Although the herd was reproducing, the animals also showed signs of suffering. Bureau of Land Management officials said they saw very few yearlings in the roundup, a possible sign that young, vulnerable horses were not making it through the winter when forage is scarce. By law, the BLM is supposed to establish what's called an appropriate management level, or AML, for each herd, the number of horses a given area of land can sustain. These AMLs guide land management decisions, and they are often contested as environmental groups complain that the BLM routinely overestimates the carrying capacity of the land, which results in overgrazing and habitat destruction. The maximum AML for the Piscines East Douglas herd is 235 horses. Kathy DeGonia, president of Piscines Mustangs, says that even after the 2022 roundup, there were still probably 1,000 horses in that area, more than the land could support, especially with cattle in the mix. In recent years, her volunteer group, along with the BLM, has been hauling water to the animals from June to November, part of the unending work it does to try to keep the horses and the landscape cared for. People who, first of all, don't know there are wild horses in Colorado think all wild horses should remain free, but they don't know the complications, Degonia says. Yeah, we would love to have them all wild and free too, but that's not an option with how much they have to reproduce. They'll die of starvation first, and no one wants that. The Piscine's East Douglas herd provides a glimpse into those complications. In the weeks leading up to the last summer's roundup, the BLM prefers to use the term gather. BLM officials received threatening calls and emails from opponents. Misinformation ran wild. A story went out about our auction that a four-wheeler was used to rope a foal and drag that foal to a pen, says Bill Mills, field manager of the BLM's White River field office. It happened, but it happened in Nevada. Across the West, a constellation of groups, the Cloud Foundation, American Wild Horse Campaign, CANA Foundation, Wild Horse Education, routinely protest the roundups, which they say are anti-ethical to the spirit of wild horses. They also criticize placing the horses in long-term holding on private ranches, some of which have been shown to mistreat the animals. The horse advocates' overarching complaint is that the BLM prioritizes the interests of cattle ranchers over the welfare of free-roaming horses. The BLM says they have to remove horses because they say they're overpopulated, but they set the AML, says Grace Kuhn, communications director of the American Wild Horse Campaign. The National Cattlemen's Beef Association lobbies every year for wild horse removal to keep public lands ranching going. Every single year, the BLM sends in low-flying helicopters to round up horses and then ships them off to holding pens for the remainder of their lives. This is unsustainable. The BLM says that 26,785 is the appropriate number of mustangs and wild burros on BLM lands. But many people, and not just wild horse advocates, say the official numbers are half-baked. A 2013 report from the National Research Council criticized the BLM for faulty math and said the agency's estimates for the population sizes of wild horses and burros cannot be considered scientifically rigorous. The Sierra Club's formal policy on wild horse management also criticizes the BLM for overinflating the AML and recommends that managers should reestablish the conditions necessary to support native wildlife and protect native ecosystems, including the option of removing cattle from wild horse areas by retiring livestock grazing leases. Regardless of what the exact appropriate management level of wild horses is, the fact remains that we've never gotten the numbers down to that level. In 2007, the number of mustangs on the range was nearly at the nationwide AML. Then the Great Recession diminished adoptions, and the BLM reduced the pace of roundups. The wild horse population soon shot back up. No one likes putting the horses into long-term holding. It's getting to the point where you're warehousing all these really revered animals, and there's distrust between all of the stakeholders, Carlisle says. In an effort to increase the adoption of horses gathered from the wild, in 2019, the BLM created the Adoption Incentive Program, which gave buyers $1,000. But it's been rife with abuses. Horses with BLM freeze brands started showing up at slaughterhouses, and some animals were shipped to Canada and Mexico. The American Wild Horse Campaign says it identified one family that had received $82,000 of taxpayer money through the program, far beyond the legal limit, and that many of the horses the family had adopted were on their way to slaughter when they were rescued. Horses are going to slaughter, and BLM refuses to acknowledge that, Kuhn says. Indeed, the BLM denies culpability for the horses that have ended up in slaughterhouses. Fertility control is also controversial. BLM officials complain that it's a complicated and time-consuming tactic. It's easy to say the solution is to go and do fertility control on horses, but the average mare is pregnant 9 days after she gives birth. So it's not a big window, says Mills of the BLM. Wild horse advocates say it's often done ineffectively, mostly because the BLM has not prioritized it. Less than 1% of the BLM budget is spent on meaningful fertility treatment, Kuhn says. Just about any horse management strategy will make someone uncomfortable, in part because all the strategies run counter to the narrative that mustangs can just be wild and free. We say we want ecosystem balance, but our thumbs are already on the scale, and we should be realistic about that. I think back to the Piscine's horses in the BLM auction, the way I couldn't quite tell if they were still wild once they were in the pens. These days, that wildness is a bit of an illusion. It depends on context, and probably also where your definition of management is. To be a wild horse girl today requires holding various opposing ideas in the mind at once. If we want to see some horses running free on the range, we need more constraints on how we let them go. And we're up against time this afternoon. Thank you so much for joining us for the June 14th reading of The Environment. My name is John.
If you enjoyed this program, please register for our free services at www.aincolorado.org or by calling 303-786-7777.